And welcome back to another episode of the BisonReport.com radio podcast. This is Ryan Burns, and joining me, as always, is Ross Uglum. And we are here for your preview edition of a couple of very big games tomorrow evening. One being the basketball team heading up to Grand Forks to take on North Dakota. And then, obviously, it is the playoff semifinal between the North Dakota State Bison and James Madison. So, Ross, how are you on this Thursday afternoon?
I'm doing really well. Tomorrow's one of my favorite days of the year. The Friday night tailgate at the Fargo Dome is always a lot of fun. The semifinal game has historically obviously gone very well for North Dakota State. So I'm excited. There's no doubt about that. It should be tons of fun, and it sucks kind of having to sort of pay attention to the basketball game on my phone, but that's the way it is.
All right, so let's get into it. This is going to be a long episode. Ross has been fortunate enough to get a lot of different interviews throughout this entire podcast. I hope that you bear with us here, and this is going to be one of the longer ones. But, Ross, let's get into our news part of the podcast. Let's start by talking about the All-America team that I believe was released here today. A couple of offensive linemen for the Bison make the first team.
Yeah, Landon Lechter, who I thought really took a step forward this season and established himself as a professional football prospect, really had a good year from that right tackle spot. I think he was the best right tackle in the country, and I was very, very impressed with his work all season long. It's a North Dakota native kid. Very, very impressive. And then Big Zach Johnson, I think he would have been the easy money favorite for North Dakota State to be on the first team All-American list this year. I think he's the best guard in the country. I think that Zach, as well as Landon, will have that chance to play at the next level as well. There aren't that many true guards that get drafted, but I think Zach has a real opportunity to do that and is part of what makes this Bison offensive line so impressive is his work from the left guard position. And I think part of what's made the entire left side of the offensive line having to break in a new left tackle so successful is the leadership and the ability of Zach Johnson to play really good football.
And when you look at the third team, are you surprised that pass rusher Greg Menard made the third team and not anything above that? He was one of the most consistent players on this Bison defense. It seems like every game he'd have at least a sack, but he never really did have that blow-up game that we were all anticipating. But are you surprised that he's on the third team and not the first or second?
No, I'm not surprised. Greg is a guy that had some huge, huge games last season, but as you mentioned there, no big blow-up style games this year. He had 10.5 sacks, very much all kind of one or a half a sack per game type of deal. He wasn't winning a lot of like Player of the Week awards, things like that, so it's actually good, I think, from that perspective that he has been recognized as an All-American because he did pitch in other places. You don't see a ton of edge defenders who generally have their responsibilities to turn the play inside. This is a guy with 57 total tackles, which is a pretty high number for a defensive end, and he had 15 tackles for loss to go along with those 10.5 sacks. So this is an impact guy, and certainly I feel like an All-American and a player to certainly watch for as an All-American next season as well.
And I want to talk a little basketball here before we switch back to football. When you look at yesterday's starting lineup against UC Davis, you look at the fact that Dexter Werner went back to the bench and Dylan Miller got the start. I'm sure we're going to talk about this more here when we review the UC Davis game, but are you surprised that the coaches went back to that different starting lineup?
No, I think Richmond said it best in his post-game comments that they were looking for success. They were looking for things that they had done in the past that had gone well, and that was one of those things. I mean, having Werner as a player that comes off the bench, even if it is 3-4 minutes into the game, it sets things up a little bit differently, and I think we'll talk about that when we get into the review of the game last night, but not surprising at all, and I think a smart move by the coaching staff.
finally, before we get to some recruiting time, in the pre-game video gate, it appears that James Madison is going to elect to use their pre-game video. Obviously, last week, the South Dakota State Jacks didn't decide to do so. So what are your thoughts on James Madison electing to play their pregame video at the Fargo Dome?
Yeah, it's pretty wild. I mean, I think it's going to be after the national anthem. Those guys are going to be on the field. North Dakota State will obviously have already come out for their Thunderstruck intro like they do most weeks. But these guys playing a video at the Dome, I mean, they're going to get booed. And maybe that is the kind of thing that's going to rile up this James Madison team that comes into Fargo kind of thinking that they're the underdog. But not something, I guess, that I would do. I would probably just leave well enough alone. But leaving well enough alone didn't work real well for South Dakota State last week. I mean, they lost the game by 26 points. So we'll see if riling up the Bison fans works out better for James Madison than it did against the Jacks. But what do you have as far as some football recruiting news?
Well, I think there's only a few different things that we can talk about from the last time we spoke. One is the fact that one of the top defensive back targets, Jake Springer, someone we took an official visit earlier this month, I believe the first weekend of December, decided to commit to the Naval Academy yesterday. He also took an official visit to South Dakota. He took one to Navy in early October, and he decided that he wanted to pursue a career out at the Naval Academy. So I can't really fault a guy for wanting to go out and serve his country. So North Dakota State's going to be looking for another safety target here in the new future. We also got to talk about Ezekiel Vandenberg, a tight end from Illinois that they offered, I believe, on Monday night. Well, come Tuesday night, he decides that, I'm going to commit to Illinois State. So NDSU still looking for another tight end body, as I believe Braylon Lund is not on the roster again, even though I know he was hosting official visitors earlier this season. So not entirely sure what the deal is there. And then finally, Mitchell West, the cornerback that was currently committed to Purdue. He has reopened up his recruiting process fresh off an NDSU visit. From talking with him, I can tell you NDSU is his top school right now. So anytime that you get to potentially flip a Big Ten commit, I think you have to do so, Ross. But let's get into our first interview of the day, shall we?
Yeah, just a heads up on this one. This is a before the game against UC Davis last night. I had a chance to chop it up a little bit with NDSU freshman wing Tyson Ward, and we'll play that interview for you guys right now.
Here with Bison freshman wing Tyson Ward. Tyson, how's it going?
What's going on? How are you?
Good, good. I want to know when during this offseason it became clear to either you or the coaching staff that you were going to play this year.
I don't really know, to be honest with you. I was kind of a shocker to me when Coach told me that I was going to be playing this year, and I was kind of happy when he told me that. You know, it's always the kid's dream to come and play straight off as freshman.
So what was it like? What was going through your head when he sends you in to check in that first time against Arkansas State?
Just like your dreams coming true. You know, you just want to make this moment last for a long time.
Describe your experience at Xavier. That was a top 10 team. You were coming straight out of high school.
It was surreal. You know, it was crazy. Just getting to play in that type of atmosphere was just once in a lifetime on the team.
Coach Richmond said early in the season when you were struggling shooting the ball that you were playing good basketball, just kind of wasn't going in. What happened during that tournament down in North Carolina when you started scoring the ball better?
A little bit more confidence in myself and more confidence in my shot. You know, instead of getting down on myself, you're just looking to get the next one and keep shooting.
What are the differences between what you see in the game of basketball as a high school senior and now? And then is there anything that you do differently as a freshman that comes off the bench as opposed to what you did as a senior in high school?
As a senior in high school, I drove to the basket a lot more attacking the basket, and I see myself settling a little bit more now that I'm in college. You know, just not got to get used to it a little bit more and then get more comfortable.
Whether it's on your own or something that the staff is, but what are you working on now? What are you trying to improve?
Just being patient on offense, you know, not forcing anything up, just looking to find my teammates in open spots, get quick, easy ones.
You're a freshman. You're from Florida. What is the attitude around after losing a big game at home to UND? I mean, do you get the concept of that rivalry?
Almost definitely. I went into it knowing the history about it, like how hard they go at each other. And it definitely kind of killed me because that was my first time playing, and I didn't want to lose my first time playing against UND. But, you know, we got to get the next one.
So as a freshman, do you kind of just shut up and listen, or because you're a kid that plays quite a bit, do you take somewhat of a leadership role?
I mean, I don't want to overstep my boundaries as a freshman. You know, I just kind of shut up and listen and let everything take its course.
What can you guys do as far as improvement as a team, and what would you say to any Bison fans that might be a little bit nervous about how the season started?
There's nothing to worry about. You know, there's a little mix that we had to worry about, but everything will be fine. We just got to get back in the gym and get ready for next Friday and this Wednesday.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you.
Sue West, Quick and Painless.
We want to, of course, thank Tyson for his time, and thank you for coming on the show and talking to us about a little bit of Bison basketball. Let's get into it. Let's get into the review of the Davis game last night.
So 74-70 comeback victory in the second half for your Bison squad. We touched on it a bit earlier in the podcast, Ross, but what do you think of the lineup change once again?
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It's not the change that we were anticipating, the change that maybe I was looking for, but just bringing Dylan in as a starter and having Dexter come off the bench is, like Richmond said in the postgame, that's something that just brings them back to past success. That is the energy that he brings off the bench, the ability to run the offense through him. It makes a lot of sense, and honestly, it lets those perimeter players, you saw Dylan open up the game with a big dunk last night off of a setup from Paul Miller. It lets those perimeter players kind of create, lets them get their shots maybe before it's time to dump it into Dex, maybe after like the under 16 media timeout, which is honestly about all the longer that it takes them to send Werner into the lineup. So, yeah, that's something for sure to pay attention to as the season goes on. I would anticipate, for now, I guess I would certainly anticipate them sticking with Miller starting at the five and bringing in Dex and playing him. I wouldn't even call it the starter's amounts of minutes. I would say potentially more than that because he plays a lot.
Well, another guy I want to get your opinion on from yesterday, obviously, even being at the game, A.J. Jacobson, only 2 points in the day, just had foul trouble, ended up fouling out. What was the issue for A.J. yesterday?
Yeah, could not stay in front of his man on defense, picked up some fouls, has not been playing particularly well of late, was able to knock in a three. The Bison quickly kind of gave those points back, but he just hasn't been, you know, playing, like I said, particularly well. 5 points against UC Davis, 7 against UND, did not score against Xavier, and had 3 against Missouri State. That's not good. That's not what the team needs from a junior leader. And last night was maybe potentially kind of a low moment for Jacobson, and we'll see if he pulls it back together, because as soon as he fouled out of that game, NDSU went on a big run and ended up closing that thing on a 17-4 spurt. But Jacobson needs to play better on defense, and hopefully that will feed into his offensive game, because he's getting the ball in spots where he would normally fire up a three, and it's not going up. He's hesitating more than I have ever seen him hesitate, and he's not running to the rim as much either. I mean, those are the things that he does well, are those runs to the rim with the right and left-handed floaters, and of course, his ability to shoot the three. So, waiting on that to get better, certainly, for Jacobson, no question about it.
We talked about it a lot here recently, and that's that Paul Miller has to find some sort of an offensive game, and it looks like he found it at the right time yesterday. Leads the Bison in scoring with 17 points, 5 of 12 from the field, 3 of 9 from 3. Do you think it's just that a week off helped Paul get his health back and now he's got his legs back underneath him? Or what do you think the change was for Mr. P's move yesterday?
Yep, I think he just finally saw one go down. I mean, he only shot it 42% from the field. It was not some sort of crazy, like 10 for 13 shooting night. he just was able to finally see one go down. And once he saw one go down, that was kind of it. He took some off-the-dribble contested threes in crunch time last night that went in. Definitely continued to go to the rim. And, you have to be impressed with the way that Paul was able to kind of take the reins back over and be the leader that team need. Richmond said at the end of the game, sophomore Paul, we probably get beat, but with junior Paul, we win that game. And that was really impressive work from our guy, P. Smoove, and I would anticipate a better performance certainly tomorrow against UND than was seen last Wednesday.
My next question for you would be on the UC Davis side of things. One of the guys that was consistently getting NDSU in foul troubles, and I'm going to butcher his name, so bear with me, is Chima Moniki, someone who shot 14 free throws, someone that was pretty just an all-around solid player from what I saw anyway, 21 points, 5 rebounds, and 14 foul attempts. What did you think from him?
Boy, was he impressive, and it didn't really matter who North Dakota State tried on him defensively. I think foul trouble that limited him to 22 minutes played might have potentially been the difference in the game, because that was not a guy that they wanted to mess with at all. Had a couple of different post moves that were almost indefensible. He had this one-legged fadeaway type deal that he would use the glass on, and that is really hard to defend, and I was just really impressed with Monique. I thought he was a heck of a player. Brent Lamar also was very, very impressive, but he just kind of got hot from three. It was Monique that I thought was kind of uncontrollable on the block, and it is fortunate that he didn't move his feet a whole lot on defense and picked up those four fouls.
We also have to talk about the man that led in this segment, 21 big minutes from Tyson Ward, a couple of absolutely gigantic threes. Tyson, 8 points on the day, excuse me, in those two big threes. The true freshman has some kahunas, Ross.
Yeah, he screws up a lot of stuff for the other team on defense. His length and athleticism, switching on screens, which a lot of the teams that NDSU plays will run these high screen offenses where they're doing a lot of stuff up by the 3-point line, and when guys switch off on Tyson Ward and realize that he can move just as well as the 6'3" guard that was just on them, it's not a great situation for the opposing team, and you can tell that he's a different type of athlete from some of the guys that have been part of this program. And I was really impressed with the minutes that he gave Jacobson getting into foul trouble. Ward was the guy off the bench. Dengu played 15 minutes last night as well. Probably not his finest performance. Was unable to get on the scoreboard there. But, man, those were big shots from Tyson Ward, especially the first one was kind of, you know, he passed it up, got it right back. They were losing at that point in the game. And to knock a three home, to go up two was big, and then the corner three with no hesitation whatsoever to extend that lead was huge as well. You can just see that there's a competitive fire in this kid. Very, very impressive, something that the coaching staff is really going to appreciate and that I appreciate as well. I think it's very easy to see why this staff felt that Tyson had to be part of this rotation right away, and lo and behold, this Bison coaching staff with another late recruiting period masterpiece. It looks like this guy's going to be an important part of what goes on in North Dakota State for the next 4 years.
So let's talk about this North Dakota game tomorrow. Again, for folks who don't remember, well, there was an 18-point home loss last week to the North Dakota Fighting Hawks. So I'm guessing when I ask you what has to go different, guessing some things off the top of your head, Ross, are they can't shoot 1 of 20 from 3, they have to make over 45% of their free throws, and if they have a turnover to assist ratio of 13 to 5, they're not going to probably win for the second straight time, are they?
No, I mean, take care of the ball would be a big part of it. There's no question about that. Shoot the ball better, I think, would certainly be ideal. But as far
as elite basketball takes, we're giving all of our listeners.
Yeah, for sure. But just continue to defend. I have actually no problem the way that they defended Quentin Hooker, taking him kind of out of the game. Richmond, again, you know, mentioned that this Crandall kid is not somebody who has shot the ball particularly well in the past. He wasn't a good shooter a season ago. He's still shooting just 25% from three. If you're going to let Geno Crandall beat you again, I think that's where you kind of have to go with it, because Quentin Hooker really is a great player. I think Carson Shanks probably played a bit over his head as well. So continue to play excellent defense on Hooker. Make the other guys beat you. I really don't think that they had a bad game plan going into that last UND game. I just think that Murphy's lock on a hit, they couldn't make anything, and Crandall made everything he looked at.
So do we still yet know how good is North Dakota? Again, fans saw them last week, and the only game they've played since then was a 78-70 loss to Northern Iowa on the road in Cedar Falls, where Quentin Hooker was able to get back on track, where he scored 22 points, leading all scorers. But again, how good is North Dakota, and do we still know?
Well, that's kind of the hell of it, I think, really, because you look at those games going into the game against North Dakota State at Fargo, and you would not be impressed by that for any reason, I don't feel like. Then they blow out the Bison at home and then give Northern Iowa a run on the road. Maybe they are good. I mean, historically not a very good program, but this is probably the best player they've ever had in Quentin Hooker, and it's his senior year. So maybe this is a team kind of built to make a run in the Big Sky Conference. I don't know. We're going to find out a lot on Friday. I think North Dakota State figures some stuff out, kind of knows who they're going to trust moving forward, and they have you know, that revenge thing on their mind. It's not something that the staff or the players are going to talk about, but if you think that Dexter Warner wants to get swept by the Fighting Hawks his senior year, you know, I've got another thing coming for you, because that's not something that he's going to be okay with. So we're going to find out just how good North Dakota is. If they blow out the Bison again, they're a good squad. I mean, this NDSU squad might not be exactly what we thought it was in, you know, coming into the season. And I don't think really with just how much of the production is coming from younger players that the Bison are even as good now as they will be in March. But if they get whipped by UND again, I would watch out for the Fighting Hawks in the Big Sky, that's for sure.
And for North Dakota State, you look at their last five games, 2-3. They are coming off a big second-half victory over UC Davis yesterday. But, again, a team that's won only two of their last five games, this game tomorrow is going to give them a chance to cure a lot of what ails them. Heading it down next week to Arkansas before they open up conference play, it is a big opportunity for this team tomorrow.
Yeah, it certainly is. I think, you know, there's three big things that they can get through tomorrow. First of all, slow starts. They started slow again, dug themselves a hole. The games that they've lost this season have been because of holes that they've dug themselves. And to be honest, even in the Arkansas State and UC Davis wins, they've dug themselves holes at home that they've been able to crawl out of. What they did against Missouri State and Xavier were dig holes that never even allowed them to be competitive in the basketball games. So they need to start better. They need to play better on the road. I mean, they were not a good road team last season whatsoever. And then, of course, you know, beating UND, that's huge. That is, to get swept by UND, I don't care if this team goes to the Sweet 16. People are going to remember getting swept by UND. So three big things, I think, that you can take from that game tomorrow. This is a big one for North Dakota State men's basketball tomorrow in Grand Forks.
All right, so let's get to your prediction. What do you think the game score is going to be up there in Grand Forks tomorrow?
I think NDSU is going to play really good defense like they did last night. They will maybe not jump out to a big lead, but they'll at least keep things competitive, and then in the second half, they will wear UND down. I've got 65-60 North Dakota State tomorrow night in Grand Forks to split the season series, even though the first, you know, it's at each other's places. So I think it'll be 65-60 Bison.
Now we're gonna, go ahead. Yeah, let's transition back to football. And Ross has an exclusive interview with QB1.
Yeah, I had a chance to sit down with Easton Stick and talk football for 6 or 7 minutes. The rest of the team, I believe, was in like a punt coverage meeting, which he told me he didn't have to go to. So it was nice to be able to sit and talk to, as you mentioned, QB1. We talked a little bit about his recruiting process. We talked about his time when Carson Wentz was here, and then we got deeper into football, talked a little bit about this season. So we will play that Easton Stick interview for you guys right now.
Your Bison quarterback, Easton Stick. Easton, how's it going?
Good. It's been a good couple weeks, and excited to get back for one more.
So let's kind of start at the beginning and describe your recruiting process. You were a kid that had some FBS offers, and how did you end up at North Dakota State?
Just felt right when I came up here for my visit, and obviously when I was recruited, Coach Wold left, and so there's kind of that transition and trying to figure out who the coaching staff was going to be. And once Coach Fireman was hired and I got up here for my visit, you know, I knew I was going to the right place and was like, excited to be a Bison.
So I can't talk about your recruiting process without talking about the Twitter snafu and the password thing. I want to know what happened and if you ever found out the culprit.
Yeah, I did. It was a friend, you know, one of my friend's younger brother that went to our high school, and it was on an iPad that we'd used during class, and yeah, so he got me pretty good, but I might never live that one down.
So you're a big Packers fan. How did that happen growing up in Omaha? Is the reason you were 12, and did you take anything from their quarterback?
I was a huge Brett Favre fan growing up, and so just through that became a Packers fan, and I've watched him since then. And, obviously Aaron Rodgers is this pretty special talent. But as far as the jersey number, that's what I got when I showed up here. BG threw me in the locker, and that's what it was. So. But no, he's a special talent, and you know, there's a lot of guys in the NFL that are cool to watch and take things from.
When you were a redshirt, you traveled with the team. Did you have a different redshirt experience than the rest of your classmates? As far as I know, Kramer has a completely different thing than he does with guys that aren't going to play.
Yeah, it was different. I kind of had a little bit of both going on as far as being a redshirt and doing the developmental lift with guys in my class and kind of what Coach Kramer does, but my schedule is a little bit different. I was up here for meetings, you know, before practices and obviously traveling and being on the sidelines. And so that was huge, kind of building a routine and learning from the coaches and from Carson and guys like that and building that routine. So, you know, when it got to last year and I was a backup, you know, I kind of had a routine set and was ready to go.
In 2014, with them traveling you, did you feel like if something bad happened to Carson, you would have been the backup as a true freshman?
No, I don't think so. I don't know. Definitely wasn't ready to play at that point.
Okay.
Definitely needed all of that year to kind of get ready and learn.
What was the value of last season's experience, especially the playoff experience?
It was huge. You know, you can practice and prepare and do all the right things that way, but game reps, live reps are so much different than anything else, and until you're out there and really playing and being in the huddle, it's different. So those reps are huge and helped me a ton this past year.
Was it difficult for you last year to play that much and get the team to a national championship and then have to sit?
Obviously, as a competitor, you want to go out there and play and contribute, but at the same time, Carson went so much to me and to our team, and I knew that if he hadn't been there, you know, helping me through my first year and even last year preparing, we wouldn't have been in that situation. He meant a ton to our team, and it was his game to play.
How much easier was the first game this year because of all of that experience?
Oh, it's hard. And I'm sure, you know, throughout the offseason, it would have been such a different mindset going forward if I hadn't played. And so it was huge just from a leadership standpoint, too, being more comfortable and going out there knowing that I'd played and kind of knew what to expect.
When clowns like me say that you are 21-1 as a starter, does that kind of stuff bother you?
It's a team thing. I think that stat is really cool for our program and for Coach Kleiman and his staff, guys that have been here all 3 years, and for our locker room, the success that we've had these past couple years, and obviously going back before even I was here. So that's a cool stat, and hopefully we can keep it going.
Carson Wentz is on the intro video. I mean, he was ahead of you when you were here, number 2 overall pick. How much of the expectations you feel like the fans, the media places on you, have anything to do with him?
You know, I don't know. It's something that I've got my own standards and my own expectations, and, you know, I know those exceed you know, anything else that people could expect from me. And so whether, you know, people think I'm playing well or playing not as good as I need to be, it's kind of indifferent to me. I've got my own standards, and you know, our whole team does, you know, holding each other to, you know, a high standard and being accountable, and so that's important.
How often do you guys keep in touch, talk football, things like that?
We're pretty good friends. We talk, you know, pretty much daily, and pick each other's brains, and obviously both busy, got our own things going on, but talk quite a bit.
I think it's obvious the last at least 3 weeks that the offense is going better, specifically the passing offense. What is going better?
Well, you guys are just executing and playing with a lot of confidence and playing fast, and that's the biggest thing is when you're doing those things and flying around having fun, the game's easier. And so you guys are playing fast, and hopefully we can keep that going.
What can you improve upon these last, well, hopefully two games, but certainly this next one?
Yeah, obviously I had a turnover in the red zone last week, and you know, I can't do that. That one's on me. And so things like that, and a couple times settling for field goals the last couple weeks. Anytime you're in the red zone, you want to score touchdowns, and that'll be big this week. And so finding ways to finish drives and stay on the field.
Do you have a favorite route in this offense to throw?
I don't know if I have one favorite route. Everybody does a little bit, you know, different routes well. Obviously, Darius in the slot and Pert, guys like that in the slot, and then Dallas, RJ, and Dimitri's kind of playing all over. And you throw Jeff in there and even Chase, Lance, guys that can play everywhere. And so everybody does things really well, and, you know, but I don't know if I have one particular.
Okay. When things break down, do you look for RJ just because you guys have been together so long, or you just look for whoever's open?
We're just looking for whoever's open. We're playing football, and, you know, everybody kind of has their own rules as far as when the play breaks down, scramble drill stuff, and guys are just playing at that point and trying to make the play.
What does your offense have to do well to advance to the national championship?
We've got to stay on the field, and that starts with being good on first and second down, and then finding ways to convert on third down. And then, like I said, once we get to the red zone, we got to score touchdowns. And by doing that, you know, time of possession will go up, and hopefully we can get a win.
And if you are able to win another championship this year, would this one mean a little bit more being the starting quarterback?
It would be different. Obviously, I've played a bigger role, and we get a chance to play in the national championship game. And so, yeah, that would be special.
All right. Thanks, man.
I want to thank Easton Stick for coming on the show. We want to thank the Sports Information Department at North Dakota State for allowing us to do that. And we really appreciate his time. Let's get into this Bison versus James Madison semifinal showdown.
So when you look at James Madison's last three games, you know, your most recent sample size, they put up 63 points against Elon, 55 points against New Hampshire, and they absolutely boat raced Sam Houston State last weekend in the quarterfinals, 65-7. I'd say this is an offense that's coming in playing on high cylinder runs.
Yeah, what's the old saying? Everybody's got a plan until you get punched in the mouth. That's got to be your rally cry if you're a Bison fan. You have to hope that these guys are playing East Coast football like the East Coast football that North Dakota State has come to understand. You thought Richmond was flying pretty high coming in last season, and they got kicked right back out the door. So that's what you have to hope for if you're a Bison fan, because on paper and on film, independent of who they're playing, these guys look pretty good.
Yeah, and when you look at the punt return game, it's absolutely absurd where, folks, James Madison has returned a punt 21 different times so far this season. They're averaging 28 yards a punt return. Legitimately, they're averaging 28 yards a punt return, but as Coach Kleinman was joking, Ross, I don't think it's really going to matter against Jackson Coons.
Yeah, he was giving Polasek a hard time because he felt like any time the offense punted, it was an automatic touchdown. So Polasek had to have a hell of a game plan to avoid any punts against this James Madison defense. But I think we all know better than that. I would anticipate NDSU using their same old strategy, which is to have Jackson Coons kick the ball straight up in the air, have that ball carry 37 yards, force the punt returner to call a fair catch, and just play the field position game. Jackson Coons is an ideal punter to play against James Madison, and boy, is that not a sentence that we thought we were going to utter in the beginning of the season, is that it's a good thing that NDSU has Jackson Coons, because his hang time is going to be just fine. I think if NDSU's kicking off from their own 30, they are going to be more than happy to kick the ball to the opposing 35 and just play ball. I don't think that anyone from NDSU is going to complain about that on the defensive end.
And finally, before we get into yet another interview from Ross Ugla, you look at James Madison's record throughout the entire season. They're 12-1 on the season, with that one loss being to the University of North Carolina in Chapel Hill, a 56-28 loss. And you look at some of their bigger victories on the season. They beat a Richmond team on the road in Richmond, 47-43, a team that was ranked 6th in the country at the time. And they also beat a number 9 Villanova team on the road that next week in a 20-7 type of victory. So the question is, how good is this James Madison team, Ross? Do we know?
Well, it's funny you talk about North Carolina. Go into Jeff Sagarin's ratings for USA Today, where he ranks every Division I football program in the country. North Dakota State, of course, first in the FCS, but 37th in the country. And the team that checks in at 36th is that North Carolina team that pounded away on James Madison. So you wonder, of course, then about the level of competition. NDSU is favored in this game by, I believe, 8.5 points. So you still feel pretty good about NDSU's chances in this one. We'll dive into that a little bit deeper right after this interview. I got a chance to talk to Demetri Williams, who had that wonderful touchdown pass called back last season, but really should get a lot of credit for the 67-yard touchdown pass by Easton Stick to Darius Shepherd. His block on the outside was really incredible. We talked about the offense that he ran at Rosemount, which was kind of a wing T type of deal, where he played a lot of running back and had to lead block on a lot of things. And I think that has a lot to do with why Demetri is such a successful blocker on the outside, and why Chris Kleiman speaks so highly of him. So we will play my chat with Demetri Williams for you guys right now.
Here with Bison sophomore receiver Demetri Williams. Demetri, how are we doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Not bad. So let's kind of start at the beginning and describe your recruiting process and how you ended up at North Dakota State.
Well, at first, I think it started with my best friend, Marquise, because Marquise told the recruiters here, because he got offered in the summer, and he said if you guys offered Demetri, both of us will commit and stuff like that. So it all started there, and then I went to the camp over going into my senior year high school, and they gave me interest after that camp. And then they came to my house, and then we started the recruiting process from there.
You describe the offense you ran in high school, because I think that has something a little bit to do with why the receiver position is so hard to learn here, because Rosemount's offense is a little bit different.
Oh, yeah. So from, like, starting at Rosemount, we ran a wing T, so that was a little bit different. Then we started to change it towards my junior and senior year, and we went to, like, more of a passing offense and stuff like that. But I mostly played running back in high school, so I was never with the receivers, so I was always learning, like, bend your knees and block and stuff and handoffs and steps. So, like, it's still a learning process at NDSU to becoming a receiver.
What are the pluses and minuses? Kleiman always speaks so highly of you as a blocker from the receiver position. That obviously has something to do with, you know, what you did before, but how difficult was it to make the transition, especially last year having to come in and play as a true freshman?
Well, learning to play is the hardest thing, because you go into a whole new system, there's different terms and everything, and then you got to play fast, you got to know what you're doing, but you get through it. But the hardest thing most likely was the plays.
Yeah. Do you feel like now you're developing more as a wide receiver? It seemed like earlier in your career they had very specific stuff that they wanted you to run, jets, bubble screens, stuff like that, and now you're running routes. When did that start to sort of kick in? When did that part of your development improve to the point where they trust you to run complex stuff?
I think more like towards the middle of the season, with like all my effort with blocking, and they see that I'm doing stuff without the ball in my hands that I guess, so they wanted to, like, reward me with getting the ball more with route running and stuff like that, and getting more comfortable with Easton and running routes. So,
speaking of Easton, what's it been like to play with him, and how much of a help has he been to you learning the receiver position and developing chemistry with him?
It's been really great, actually, because Easton is really smart. He gets into calls and checks and figures out everything, makes everything as simple as possible for us, us receivers. And he can do plenty of things like him running the ball and throwing the ball also. Like, I really appreciate him helping us as receivers with the calls and everything, making everything simple with different coverages.
What do you guys have to do well as an offense to advance to the national championship game?
We just have to execute. We got to do our 1-11, play as a team, do your job on every play, every snap, and execute. We got to win every day, each day, every practice, and then we just got to go out there.
All right. Thanks, Dimitri, for your time. Thanks for coming on the show. And we certainly appreciate letting us in behind the scenes a little bit to what went on and what goes on in the Bison program. Now, let's finish up this preview.
So let's start by talking about James Madison on the offensive side of the ball. Let's start with the quarterback, Mr. Brian Shore. You look at what he's done statistically throughout this entire season. I don't think I've ever seen a completion percentage higher than Brian Shore's this late into the season. Folks, he's completing 74.5% of his passes. He's got a touchdown to interception ratio of nearly 5-1 with 24 passing touchdowns and 5 interceptions. Oh, and in the running game, he's also got 10 rushing touchdowns on the season. So he's going to be quite the quarterback that this NDSU defense is going to have to handle, Ross.
Yeah, he's an impressive player. There's no doubt about that. I think you look at a guy who's the CAA Player of the Year. I think it's very deserving. You hope that a guy that completes that high of a percentage of his passes would be kind of the statue that NDSU was able to defend so well, but he's not. He has the ability to run the ball. He is averaging over 5 yards per carry. They're going to run that spread offense all day long, and he is going to be the general of that offense. I think the 75% completion percentage is probably a little bit overrated, in just in the sense of as far as wide as they spread out these teams and the throws that he's asked to make. These are not NFL throws. It reminds me a lot of like what Bryce Petty used to do at Baylor. They're going to run a lot of smoke routes. They're going to run a lot of quick slants. They're going to get the ball out of his hands to wide open guys in space between 0 and 2 yards away from the line of scrimmage. All of that said, this guy is going to be a problem on Friday night, and if the Bison don't defend him well, they might not be going to Texas.
And when you talk about their running back, who's also, you know, he's pretty good, I'd say, considering he was the American Sports Network FCS Player of the Year. He was first team All-CAA. He was a finalist for the FCS Walter Payton Award as well. You know, what makes him so successful? Well, he's averaging 117 yards a game on the ground. He has 20 total rushing touchdowns, and he's averaging, so again, as I talked about, somewhere around 117, 120 yards a game rushing. I mean, for a Bison defense that's done a pretty dang good job of shutting down the run all season, this is going to be one of the better running backs they faced all year.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, he is talented. He gets really big lanes to run in because of just how wide open that offense is. They are going to use a little bit of tempo stuff, so NDSU is going to have to get lined up quickly. You hope, you know, if you're a Bison fan, that they have Pierre G. Tucker available to them. That's going to be important. It's going to be, I think, ideal for them to have Tucker, Davis, and Stumpf in there the whole time, keeping the communication amongst guys that have been there forever, because it's going to happen fast when James Madison wants it to happen fast, because they're a team similar to what the University of South Dakota did that will huddle, but they will go as well. So the Bison have to be paying attention to that. And a lot of what Abdullah does is because of the, you know, the wide open spaces that he generally gets to operate in, and he can kind of make one cut, put his foot in the ground, and get 6-7 yards without a whole lot of difficulty. The Bison, historically in the playoffs, have been very, very good at run defense, and I'm not sure how many option looks they're going to be able to use with Brian Shore, but they're going to have to pay attention to Abdullah as well as the passing game.
And again, you talked about this spread offense for James Madison. When you look at how NDSU is going to match up defensively, I'm guessing that's going to mean a lot of nickel, maybe a lot of dime out there on the field. So that means a lot of Dom Davis and a lot of defensive backs with this Bison back seven.
Yeah, I would anticipate that as well. I would anticipate, the base of what NDSU does tomorrow night to have a lot to do with the nickel. I think Dom Davis is going to play quite a few snaps. I would not expect to see much of Matt Plank. I don't really think that he's going to play a ton in this game if they are able to play G. Tucker, but G. Tucker's going to have to be healthy if they're going to play him, because he's going to have to move side to side a lot in this one. There's not a whole heck of a lot that James Madison does offensively that's going to allow a linebacker to operate north and south and move downhill. They're going to have to get from sideline to sideline, so it's going to be important for PGT to be at 100%, or we are going to see a ton of Matt Plank, and if that happens, that's really when the nickel becomes the base, because they are going to try and protect Chris Board in that way. They are going to try and keep Dom Davis out there. But I really think you're going to see single high looks with Grimsley and Allison to one side. And then if Jalen Wimbush is ready, great. If not, it's going to be Davis and McCoy to the other side with Trey Dempsey kind of patrolling center field. I would guess that's how the Bison are going to defend this team for most of the day.
And I want to talk a little about pass rush. We talked about Greg Menard, a third-team All-American. But you look at this NDSU defense, 34 sacks on the season. Do you think they're going to be able to get to the quarterback and cause some havoc back there, or is the ball going to be coming out too quickly?
I think it's going to probably be coming out a little bit too quickly. I would probably not anticipate a whole lot of the Bison blitzing. I think it's potentially a fool's errand. I don't know if the ball is going to come out that quickly. I don't know if it really helps you to bring five or six guys when the ball's already out. I think it probably helps you to contain and then make those plays in space, limit those 1 to 2 yard throws to 2 to 3 yard gains, force James Madison into third and long, third and medium. And then you can rush the passer because they have to call longer developing routes. But I would be very surprised when you talk about Brian Shore's speed and just the speed of that offense, if you're going to see a 5 or 6 sack game from this defense. I think that would surprise me quite a bit.
So when you look at the Dukes on defense, Ross, you look at how they've given up 23 rushing touchdowns, 4.5 yards a carry, and they're also giving up just north of 200 yards through the air. And I know you want to talk about how many points they're giving up a game, but how about this, Ross? Do we know if this defense is any good going against some CAA offenses? I'm sure they haven't gone against a kind of offense like they're going to be facing tomorrow.
No, and you talk about the physicality in North Dakota State football, you're generally talking about the defense. But what people underrate is this offense. This is, I think, you know, Kleiman said in the press conference that they don't have a phase that you would call weak. Well, I'm going to call their defense weak right now. I think that the CAA doesn't play very physical football. I think Richmond found that out last year. And for James Madison to come in and expect their defense not to get pushed around by this offensive line with two All-Americans on it, I think is something that is probably not very good business. I would guess you're going to see NDSU really establish their brand of football on the offensive end and try to run up the score while controlling the clock, and that's something that they were certainly able to do against South Dakota State. I would guess when you talk about Winicky and Goddard and then you talk about Shore and what these guys are able to do, no, South Dakota State does not run a true spread. But most of their stuff's out of the shotgun, and I think the way to beat South Dakota State is very similar to the way to beat James Madison.
So when you look at the CAA overall, this conference, obviously James Madison at the top, they were 8-0 in the conference. Then you look at a couple of other teams here. Villanova finished 9-4 in the season. New Hampshire finished 8-4 in the season. And then a Richmond squad goes 5-3 in the conference, 10-4 on the season. How do you think the CAA compares to the Missouri Valley this season?
I mean, I don't think it compares really in any season. I think this was maybe a year where the CAA established itself as the second-best conference in the country because just of how unimpressive the Big Sky really has been, especially in this postseason. I know that Eastern Washington is moving on, but none of the other teams won even a game. I mean, North Dakota, Weber State, and Cal Poly all lost immediately upon entering the postseason. Eastern Washington's kind of a different beast, and they've been the class of that league for a long time. I'm very impressed that the CAA, at the same time, it really has not gone particularly well for that league when they've come to Fargo. Richmond, I think, has been out here. Robert Morris, although Robert Morris might be Patriot League, I'd have to look that up. But Richmond and then James Madison in 2011 or 2012 when they were here, it didn't go super well for them at that time. East Coast football really seems to struggle when they come to Fargo. Coastal Carolina struggled up here as well. That East Coast football just seems to be a little bit softer, and it has a hard time winning in the Fargo Dome.
So when you look at this Bison offense and you look at how they stack up against this defense, do you think that this is going to be a game like last week where it was a 2-1 in terms of time of possession? I believe the Bison held the ball for over 40 minutes of the 60 against South Dakota State. I'm guessing you're thinking that this team isn't going to be able to do that for two straight weeks, but do you think they can control time of possession once again?
I do, and I think that that's ultimately going to be their goal. They're going to put this game in the hands of Easton Stick and ask him to control it. They're going to ask him to control the clock, and they are going to try and limit the amount of possessions that James Madison has, and that instantly puts more pressure on those possessions. You get, a couple, 3-4 NDSU possessions that result in 17 points and take the entire first half. All of a sudden, James Madison punts once or turns the ball over once, and they have huge problems.
In my last question here before we get into our prediction part of the podcast here as we start to wrap things up is, when you look at the most important players on each side of the ball, I think we could probably make the argument that Easton Stick is the most important player on the field coming for tomorrow's game. What say you, Russ?
Yeah, he is the MVP of this game. I really think that it's going to come down to Easton Stick and whether he can limit his turnovers, affect the game in a positive way running the ball, and then continue the development of this passing offense. He's going to have the full complement of receivers against him. He's going to be going up against a team that has given up 40-plus points on a number of occasions, a team that's going to be riding high after limiting Sam Houston State to 7 points. His management of this game, of the tempo of this game, his management of the clock, all of these things are going to be whether or not the Bison win this game. Let's be real about it. Until something pretty drastic changes, NDSU is an 8.5-point favorite in this game. They've won 5 consecutive national championships. These games always come down to what NDSU does or doesn't do well. James Madison, as arrogant as it might sound, they're just kind of here. If Easton Stick can play Bison football and allow the Bison to play Bison football, James Madison is not this team that's going to come and break everything up. Now, if he turns the ball over, if they go 3-and-out a lot, if James Madison gets rolling, that's a completely different story.
All right, let's get into this prediction part of the segment. Before I reveal my prediction, Ross, I want to give you the betting lines here. North Dakota State is an 8.5-point home favorite. Over-under for this game is 59 points, so a little bit different than what we saw initially earlier in the week on Vegas Insider. The site I am referencing right now is 5 Dimes. So 8.5-point favorites. What stats do you think can really come into this when you look at non-conference teams coming into the Fargo Bowl?
Well, this is something that we pulled out last season, why I kept picking North Dakota State by these wide margins except for the game against Northern Iowa. It's because that's what they do. That's what they do to non-conference teams in the playoffs at home, is they kind of beat the hell out of them and send them on their way. They've played 13 non-conference playoff games at the Fargo Dome since 2010. So playoff games at home against teams outside the Valley. Their average margin of victory in those 13 games, not average points scored, average margin of victory in the playoffs, 23 points. And that is something that's going to be very difficult to overcome by James Madison. These are not 40-point victories in the first round and then close wins in the semifinals. These are very often ass kickings in the semifinals. And so my prediction is just that. It's an ass kicking. 38-17 Bison, and everybody can start booking their flights and hotels.
I'm not quite as exuberant in terms of Ross's score prediction, but I do think 38 points is the right number to choose. I got this game 38-27 NDSU victory heading to Frisco for the sixth straight year. So, Ross, there should be a lot of great Bison viewing tomorrow. Again, I'm sure a lot of folks are going to be heading to the Fargo Dome to see this game, but also remember that there's a big game going up on Grand Forest with the basketball squad. So, Ross, anything further before we send people out?
No, thanks everyone for listening.
Yeah, as Ross said, we thank you guys for listening. And if you haven't gone to the Bison Report yet this week, I believe Ross is going to have a couple more pieces coming out, including his game preview for tomorrow's game. So if you want to start to get jazzed up for that game, head on over to the Bison Report. We've got a few recruiting nuggets for you to dig into as well. So we will be back early next week to hopefully talk about a Bison basketball victory over the Fighting Hawks and a Bison football victory, as the Bison will hopefully be heading to Frisco for the sixth straight year. So for Ross, for myself, we thank you guys for listening once again, and we'll talk to you next week. Go Bison.